BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Must watch from BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yes, it's must watch. Patrick Keelty in for Nihal while he's off at the Olympics in Tokyo. But as usual, Scott Bryan and Hayley Campbell are here to talk us through the biggest television and streaming shows of the week. What are we looking at this time, Scott?
ITV2. Come out called Buffering, created, written and starring Love Island's narrator Ian Sterling with the co-creator and writer Steve Bougeier.
Did we actually purposely make that sound on your link just slightly buffering? Was that one of the greatest pieces? Was that one of the greatest pieces of production of all time, or is it just bad luck?
For the whole week, haven't we? Just that's the inevitability of these things, isn't it?
Also, Hayley, what have we got?
We've also got a new travel show by Richard E. Grant called Right Around the World, and a kind of indie film in the form of a sitcom called Mr. Corman, which is written and created by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who also stars in it.
He does indeed. So, Scott, we're going to be joined by a couple of stars. Stars. I'm going to call them stars. To talk about the show this week, What Is It?
So it's called Buffering. Hopefully I'll try to get through this without doing so. You'll recognise one of the voices right away as being the voice of Love Island, Ian Sterling. He is joined by Steve Bougeier. Both of them are the co-creators and writers of the show. And fun fact, found out just before we went on air that this was commissioned 2 years ago today. It stars Sterling as a children's television presenter who fears being stuck as one forever. Yet the series is also an ensemble piece as you get to follow all of his housemates who are all trying to be proper adults whilst also kind of failing at also being proper adults. Here's a clip.
Oh, hey. I set up a Tinder profile and I even sent a couple messages, but I made sure that they all sounded desperate and pathetic just to keep you on brand.
Thank you, Talia. Oh, and hello, Steph.
I feel like Tinder's a bit grim. Isn't there like a celebrity version you could get on?
Come on, I'm not about that whole celebrity lifestyle.
Whose application was rejected?
Well, it's pending, actually. Stephen Mulhern said he had to wait 6 months.
And he's actually famous.
All of that is very true. Welcome to Must Watch, Ian Sterling and Steve Bougeier. Lads, how are you getting on?
Hello, good afternoon.
Very well,
thank you.
Now, first of all, folks, I should declare that there's a kind of a loose relationship between myself and both you guys because, I mean, without me, neither of you would have a career, really. Isn't that?
Yeah, Patrick Keelty's my father.
Yes.
He's trying to say.
That's the Star Wars special of Love Island, Ian, isn't it?
Yeah. You're the OG, Patrick. You're the original.
That's it. So basically, before Love Island, there was Celebrity Love Island. And then when they ran out of celebrities to convince to go on it, then Ian took over the baton and turned it into the phenomena that it now is.
Yes, Paul Dunant would no longer go on it, so we just had to get normal members of the public.
Paul Dunant. Oh, I'm going back to some very dark places there. And of course, Steve, you were in the BBC New Comedy Act of the Year, which I hosted.
Yeah, you handed me my award when I won it. It was a very exciting moment. It was a highs and low that day, because I obviously won the award. I was very excited. But then I got drunk in celebration and took the awards to Burger King and demanded free chips. So it was a real mixed bag.
Is this probably the time where I should say that someone else did win that, Steve, and the money you gave me was the reason why I read your name out?
I guess so. It's been 8 years. We can reveal the truth. Who cares? I've got a sitcom now. I don't care.
So that's how we know each other.
What's Michael McIntyre done since that competition? Let's be honest.
So that's how we know each other. How do you guys know each other? And how did you come up with this, Ian?
So me and Steve met in Manchester. Steve ran some like student gigs and we actually asked someone else to go on, but my agent sort of got me to these gigs. And then we just started writing a lot of stand-up together. I had this sort of kids' TV background that we thought would be interesting for a sitcom. Steve's an excellent writer, as you'll know from seeing him in the BBC New Comedy Awards. So we sort of started working together on this project about 2016, 2017. And a mere however many years later, it's now on the telly.
Sitcoms happen really quickly, don't they?
Well, there's a reason, Patrick, I'm playing a single man in my 20s and I'm now a father in my 30s.
I did actually think that was one of the things which I kind of enjoyed watching with this, was the fact that, you know, your character is kind of still out there playing the game quite hard whenever you're now basically doing bottle feeds, nappy changes with a Peppa Pig kind of soundtrack to your life.
If that man from Normal People can pretend he's still at school, I can pretend that I'm in my 20s, all right?
No further questions, you're witness. So the first episode, I think that's probably, would it be fair to say, Scott, that that's probably the only clip that we could have played off this sitcom on BBC in the Afternoon?
Yes!
Having seen the whole series in one go, I loved it. It's it is one that is definitely filthy. I think what I'm really impressed by is, Ian, with like how you have obviously drawn to some extent your experience in children's TV into this in terms of source material. I mean, how much was there to kind of choose from in terms of stuff that you've actually sort of been through being a presenter as a kind of an inspiration?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Being a kids' TV presenter, you find yourself in this bizarre world where you're sort of lying to people every single day about how happy you are to be sort of there.
Is that not just life, Ian?
That could explain pretty much the world we live in as it stands. But yeah, so it's just that idea of, you know, I mean, I remember like my late 20s, my girlfriend of 4 years broke up with me 3 days before Christmas, and I spent the next 2 days in Bath with Jedward. So it's that just sort of juxtaposition of your actual life and then being dressed in a toga in Bath with Jedward pretending to be full of life.
Oh, hang on, sorry. You were in the city of Bath with Jedward.
Oh, it's a kids' TV show, Patrick. I ended up in an actual Bath as well, obviously.
Yes.
I'm not going to let that slide. If you go to the city of Bath and you're on CBBC, you're getting in a bath, and that bath is full of baked beans.
With Jedward.
With Jedward.
I mean, it's a good look.
So, yeah, that's basically what we draw on. It's that sort of juxtaposition with the realities and difficulties of real life and then how you've got to put this sort of face on. And I think, although children's TV highlights that, I think it is, like you sort of touched on, we all do that in our sort of like work-life balance, that sort of covering up how we actually feel about stuff and not necessarily talking about the hardships that we've gone through. And that's what this sitcom tries to deal with. And it's on ITV2, so it legally has to be filthy.
That's in the contract.
We all just lived through the millennial house sharing stuff, so it was sort of painful but funny to watch. Steve, why do you think that point in life is so rich with potential for comedy?
Well, I am very much still stuck in that point of life. Ian has very much gone ahead of me in terms of life progression, having a wife and a child. I am stuck living with my mates in a house in Brixton, which is fine, very happy for him. But I think it's a funny time in life because you're trying to be someone and you're not quite there. You know, we want our lives to be fully loaded. We want to like have the relationship, the job, the lifestyle that you imagined. And actually, you just can't afford it.
You do realize, Steve, that, you know, myself and many other married people who are actually listening to this are actually thinking that you are still currently living the dream.
Patrick, I mean, you could come hang out with me for a day. I think you'd quickly realize it's not the dream. It's deeply sad a lot of the time.
Talk to me about your character in this, Steve, because in the first episode, we see quite a lot of Ian. Does your role grow over the episodes? Talk to me about your character.
It does. I found out quite early on that I got paid per episode, so I made sure I had at least one line in each episode. You'll notice episode one, I've literally got one line.
Yeah.
Tried to cut it. I absolutely refused. I do get my role gets slightly bigger. I think by episode 5 is my peak, so please watch till then. And I play the floor manager at the kids' TV studio where Ian works, and Ian just kind of treats me like a piece of dirt. So it wasn't a huge stretch for our relationship.
Ian, whenever you actually look at something like Love Island, which is the kind of pinnacle of reality television. How difficult was it to actually move from reality TV and to be taken seriously in terms of scripted and actually get this away?
Do you know what? That's where ITV2 have been really great, because although we joke about it, obviously it is ITV2. It's, I mean, it's got that younger lens. It is sort of risky at places. We do like to deal with some sort of like bigger issues, whether it be sort of like men's inability to open up emotionally, the idea of losses covered, breakups, and ITV2 sort of strangely just left us to it. So they're either incredibly supportive or didn't read it, and so it's one of the two. But I think it's the supportive one. So I would like to think, well, hopefully people come in from Love Island and they come for sort of the quick pace and the jokes and all that, and it's got all that. But hopefully there's a more of a heart to it, and we do. Me and Steve, there was some sort of like quite important stuff that it means a lot to me and Steve as well that we wanted to deal with, and hopefully we've done that justice as well.
Steve, you tweeted a couple of years ago when you found out that this had been commissioned, that your hairdresser wasn't that into comedy, and that was the first person that you told. Have you been back for the haircut to actually lord it over your hairdresser?
No, and I hope she's listening right now. I hope she realises what a big moment she missed out on. It was awful. I got the phone call. I just wanted to ring, you know, my mum and tell her. And she went, all right, come sit down now. And I had just to sit still for 40 minutes while someone cut my hair, who was not interested in the fact that I just had a career-changing moment. It was very underwhelming, actually.
I loved it.
Even more interestingly, at the end, he asked her for free chips.
Did you get your free chips, by the way, at Burger King?
No, Burger King have a very strict policy of not giving free chips to Comedy Award winners.
Unbelievable.
The obtuse policy.
So for someone like yourself, Steve, who's done stand-up now, and then you've kind of moved into the scripted thing, you know, whenever you won that award, and then, you know, we were lucky enough to work together whenever I was touring, you came and opened for me in some of the gigs. I always saw you going in this direction. I always thought that the character comedy that you just are is something that you would end up in. Please tell me that you really enjoyed it and you want to do more of this.
I did really enjoy it. I absolutely love writing sitcoms. It's my favourite thing in the world. It's what I want to do for the rest of my life. But Patrick, I do wish you told me at the time, because I drove to a lot of far-flung places around Britain doing gigs. If you just mentioned back in 2014, you thought I was going to be a writer the whole time, that would have really saved me a lot of time.
I know, but then I would have had nobody to open for me on the tour. I mean, you know.
Also, that's not a character. He is just that awkward, Patrick. I hope you're aware of that.
Oh, no. Well, you see, this is the thing, right? Because, you know, whenever I'm watching this, and I know that Ian is kind of acting, and pretty much it's...
Thank you.
You know when people say, you know, you meet famous actors and what are they like? And they say, well, they're kind of just like who they are on screen. So the attitude that Ian carries in life, I saw a lot of that on screen, but Steve, it's just you. It's watching you.
That is deeply offensive. I play a really...
I thought that was a huge compliment.
It's a real stretch for me. My character's a neat, sort of nerdy dweeb who struggles with women. So, you know, it's basically me from 4 years ago. You haven't seen me in a while, Patrick. I've changed. I'm a changed man.
I would say crippled with comedic intelligence. That's where I see your character.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go with that. I mean, it's painful to live through. I'm pleased it's working out on screen. You know, at least I can monetize the awkwardness. Before I was just sat on my own in bars, no one talking to me.
Haley, what did you make of this? How many of the series did you catch?
I got through a couple. I will go back. But I wanted to know how you two write it together and how many fights you get into. Because I couldn't write with anybody else. I would see it as a private thing.
Yeah, well, we had this sort of I don't know how unique it was, but Steve came up with the idea of we sort of went off and wrote two independent scripts and then brought them together and sort of merged them like a sort of Power Ranger thing. Which was not very time efficient, but I suppose it saved on the sort of arguments in the development process anyway?
We did plan it first. We didn't just write two completely different scripts and then try and merge them together. There was an element of scene structure. We did a lot of it on Zoom, didn't we? Which was actually saved the arguments, because if we fell out, I just muted him and closed the laptop, and we picked up the next day.
And there's also go ahead.
Oh no, it's fine. I was going to say something. Absolutely.
This actually is now turning into an office Zoom, I have to say. No, it's fine. You go ahead. So basically, you didn't actually get together in the same room to do it. So you're kind of like the Elton John and Bernie Taupin of comedy. You just kind of send it back and forward.
Yeah, and Steve wears a wig.
See, I had you very much. I had you as the Elton character in this, Ian. That's a very, very interesting juxtaposition.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. No, but it is because of COVID. What else do we talk about these days? But we sort of, it is a weird thing to think that me and Steve are really good friends and we have known each other for years and years and years. And then we got this sort of like, for us anyway, really important commission and this really important opportunity, our sort of dream job. And then we just spent a year and a bit working on it together, not seeing one another, which was sort of bizarre. But then also I think sometimes there's a lot to be said for it when you're just in your office. Also, I think sometimes Zoom's good because it takes the computer is such a distraction. And when it is being used as your communication device, it means you're not on the phone to somebody while simultaneously sort of, through Instagram and Twitter and stuff. So it was quite good on efficiency sometimes.
Also, Ian refused to pay for Zoom Pro, so we had to restart every 40 minutes.
I would just get distracted
by those ideas.
I would just play, sort of get distracted constantly by playing the different backgrounds on Zoom the entire time. What I want to know is that, this is an ensemble piece in terms of there being housemates. Did you ever use any kind of weird housemate from past, sort of anecdotally in this? Because I think we've all had an odd housemate from time to time, such as one with me when I had a housemate who I accidentally used some of her tomato ketchup. So she super glued my doors in. So then I had to break down my own door and I had no bedroom door for 6 months.
It's funny you say that, because I genuinely had a Italian flatmate once, and I put tomato ketchup on macaroni and cheese, and she walked out of the kitchen like furious.
That's only right. I had one who was a junior doctor who would occasionally bring home lab samples he'd forgotten to drop off and would keep them in our fridge.
Why do I get the feeling that this is actually turning into the writing session for series two?
Steve's not talking, he's just writing all
Steve, down. Steve's going, oh, I'll have that. That's great.
Great.
Buffering begins on ITV2 this Thursday. That is the 5th of August at 10 p.m. You'll be able to watch all the episodes of the series immediately after on ITV Hub. Guys, this is brilliant. I think you're brilliant. I love this. I loved how fast-paced it was. I love that it wasn't afraid to go for a punchline. There was some real big laugh out loud moments, and I really do wish you all the best. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Patrick, and all the old guard from Love Island send their regards as well. By the way, Mark,
you're not still working with them, are you? You're not still working with
them. I've literally been snuck out of the ITV building and put in a white van to do this. Right, I feel like I'm a mole. I've been taken out of ITV and put in a white van by the BBC. I don't know why I'm whispering now.
That's how I got the gig to start with, Ian. So, thanks for joining us, guys. Time to crack on now with our first review of the show. What are we looking at, Hayley?
We're looking at Mr. Corman, which is a new comedy drama from Apple Plus, written and created by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who you'll remember from shows like Third Rock from the Sun, or more recently, loads of movies like 500 Days of Summer or Inception. In this one, he stars as a fifth grade teacher living in LA who's given up his dream of becoming a musician and has reached a kind of crisis point of loneliness, anxiety, and a suspicion that he just fundamentally as a person. Here's a clip. La,
la, la, la, la. I'm having anxiety or panic or something, both.
What's the difference?
I'm gonna need a sub for today. La, la,
la, la, la. What's bothering you?
Everything.
It just feels like I blew the whole thing, like I suck as a person.
You're not entitled to a perfect partner or a perfect life.
I love the fact that it was suck that actually dropped out there on the buffer.
What's it? Are we all buffering today?
We're all buffering.
It's one big grand joke.
It is. Is it a must watch?
I liked it. We've had a kind of drought recently of slick, well-made shows, and this feels like it's well-made. It's more like an indie film than a normal sitcom. I mean, so they've got more money than anyone on earth. And I always find Joseph Gordon-Levitt is watchable no matter what he's doing. And I think that counts for a lot in this, because the synopsis is man in earth or what he's doing with his life. So that's, it's not the the most original premise, but I liked it. It's not always loud funny. There are bits, given the subject matter, that are actually quite bleak and real, because he is going through anxiety and loneliness. But there are some bits that are incredibly funny. Like, there's a bit in the second episode where his flatmate sees that he's having a panic attack. So he tries to make a weighted blanket for him, which he says you can buy for hundreds of dollars on the internet. But he just goes, well, I can make you one. We don't need to do that. So he brings in this normal blanket, puts it on top of him, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and then just lies on top of him because he goes, it's weighted now. And then he refuses to leave him alone, even though he's squirming around. And I loved it as a scene because it kind of captured the desperation of not only being too poor to buy the expensive thing that will apparently help you, but also that panicked feeling you get when you're wanting to help your friend and there are these sort of half-heard things you remember and only vaguely understand, and you go, I can do that. So I like it. It's not strictly a comedy, so I wouldn't go into it expecting one. But if you want a drama about a depressed and anxious man that's occasionally very funny, I think you might like it.
There seems to be a little bit of a 500 Days of Summer vibe about it, or have I just got confused by the trailer? Because there seems to be like a psychedelic cartoon sort of dance that comes in and out. And is there any, or is it just the attitude that I'm getting off it?
I think that's the attitude. He does have these sort of imaginary things happening, or like these catastrophic apocalypse scenes that he's imagining, because that's what you do when you're spiraling. And I think it weaves into the story very well, but it does have that 500 Days of Summer thing to it because it feels like an expensively made indie movie.
Is it worth the money, Scott?
I mean, it does take a little while to get into. I kind of found Joseph's character really quite difficult to read at first, really quite difficult to kind of follow and back. And you kind of need to have somebody, even if they're going through a bit of a struggle, to have something to latch onto, at least to kind of understand what they then go through. And I think it's a very disjointed opening episode. I really found it was kind of lacking in a sense of direction. This show seems to be talking about a lot of things, but also talking about nothing at exactly the same time. But then it was in the second episode, and I was thinking to myself, okay, this series is really not really for me. But then it manages to have the most perfect depiction, I think, of anxiety and having a panic attack that I've really ever seen on TV. You sort of really feel his heartbeat constantly increase. You feel the pressure increase. You feel, no matter how many times he tries to explain to other people how he's feeling, that never gets really understood. Or you can feel his anger and frustration by the fact that nobody else is necessarily believing what he's saying to them. And this is experimental. It requires your attention, and it is sometimes verging on a level of pretentiousness that gets a bit frustrating. But I do admire its originality, and I'd say it's worth sticking with. I think it's a show that perhaps might get lost in the mix of other shows that will be coming out in the autumn. But as Hayley said, there's been a bit of a glut. I think a lot of people are watching the Olympics, and this is a show to help fill the gap.
I think what is interesting, you know, hearing you talk about it is maybe 10 years ago, the idea of anxiety and actually putting that on screen in a, you know, in a real, in a scary and in a funny way, it probably wouldn't have been commissioned.
Well, they did it with Tony Soprano, but that's as close as you got. He had the panic attack with the ducks, and then that started the whole of Sopranos. But there's a kind of Larry David quality to this as well, because there's a scene where he's going, he thinks he'll go to like a breathing exercise class, that maybe that will help calm his attacks. Because if you are having panic attacks, you will try anything. And there's this scene where he's trying to gain entry to this class, and it's pay what you can. And he kind of gets panicked figuring out what he's supposed to pay. He's like, $5 or is it $20? Is it $20? And he gives her a 20 and she goes, do you want change? And he's like, I don't know. But just the fact that that is another scene for him to panic and freak out about, I just loved. It felt real.
And so, I think that TV's improved so much over the last 10 years. I think you're now getting writers who really understand the issues because they've lightly experienced them themselves. Or you're having performance pieces, which is written and starred and created by the same person, like this with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who I think is able to build on perhaps some personal experience or resonance with the issue. I just think that people understand its complexity a lot more.
Do we see this as a series that is going to hook people and potentially lead to another? Or afterwards, do you feel, I'm glad I've done that, but I'm done? I think we find, I think we've got the answer, folks.
Look,
has Apple been recommissioning shows recently? Have you seen it? Because I've seen a lot of first series, but I haven't seen a lot of seconds.
They have done a few. For example, Ted Lasso has had one. The Morning Show is coming back. It seems to be more experimental and a bit more, I'd say, slower in its recommissions, or would kind of give places that haven't necessarily had a look elsewhere. I guess the issue always comes down to, are people going to watch it because it's on Apple TV Plus? I think a lot of people still don't really realise they have it because it's on their device and they automatically get a subscription. But also another issue is that for most people, they've been actually having a free subscription already for about a year and a half, and that's about to give up. I think Apple have been somehow sometimes extending the length and time that you can have it for free. But that's the issue. I think people will be thinking, why am I now paying a fiver for something I used to get for free of shows I've not seen? I think that's the challenge.
That is the challenge indeed. Still to come on Must Watch, Scott and Haley's review of Richard E. Grant. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Richard. He's highly successful again. Richard E. Grant, right around the world on BBC Four. Plus, we'll be chatting about the end of The X Factor and I'm a Celebrity. Won't be going to Australia for a second year.
BBC Sounds, music, radio, podcasts.
Must Watch, the best new TV and streaming shows every week. BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yes, it's Must Watch from 5 Live. This is Patrick Keelty in for Nihal while he is off at the Olympics. But as usual, Scott Bryan and Hayley Campbell are here to talk us through the biggest television and streaming shows this week. It is official. Since it was last on air, X Factor has pretty much been cancelled. Last seen on our screens in 2018. Started in 2004, ITV now say it has no plans to bring it back. This was coming, Scott, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, the fact that they have not actually had a series since 2019, and even then it was on for a week, and even then it got absolutely trounced in the ratings. I think when they announced that it was not returning, people were like, oh, okay. But it's resulted in a lot of nostalgia, hasn't it? And I think you can't take away the fact that when it was big, it was incredibly big. More than 10 million viewers watching every single week. I think people had a lot of fear of missing out with this show in terms of people watching it, even if they were incredibly cynical about the entire exercise. And it also was at a time, same with Big Brother, where it was this revolution in TV where it was members of the public deciding who is going to be famous. And I think that now sounds quite ordinary in all of the different voting reality shows we now have. But I think at the time, that was quite big. But I think also I think people became more cynical of the whole entire exercise the longer the series went on, particularly when there weren't so many artists that ending up at number one anymore.
I think, though, you know, if you look at how these programmes work, it seems to me there's always going to be a place on Saturday night television for someone performing with judges telling them how they did. And it seems to me that if you look at, you know, Pop Idol, then X Factor, that was kind of the seminal moment that gave us this.
Massively so. But I also think what then followed was maybe a period in television in which we were punching down a lot. I think if you look back at some of the most iconic auditions for these sorts of reality shows, I just don't think you would be able to have them on now, just because it involved laughing at members of the public being incredibly bad. And I think now, at a time when we're trying to talk more about, I think, the complexities of fame, but also just in terms of the effect of being famous on TV, I think producers would be a bit more hesitant to kind of have that sort of attitude. I think TV itself has moved on, because even if you look at, let's say, you know, Britain's Got Talent, they don't normally have many bad comedy acts on everyone anymore. People generally are a bit more appreciative. If anything, it's a bit like kind of like Fame Academy was, you know, back in the day. I think people are a bit more kind of positively supporting feedback rather than just saying you're rubbish and kind of making them feel like a fool.
I think, though, if you look at that time in television right the way through, you know, if you were going out and you were doing a monologue at the start of a talk show, if you look at Big Brother, if you look at, there was a certain attitude that a certain type of joke was okay, and that was kind of universal.
Yeah.
I kind of feel that when you look at something like X Factor, is it not just the case that it used to be able to change someone's life? The moment that it couldn't change someone's life, then it kind of, its usefulness as a watch goes?
Yeah, I'd say from about 2010 onwards, it became harder and harder to get number one artists. And that was the overall point of the show, was to get to number one and become hugely successful. And I think the longer with any show lasts longer, the harder a case it has to prove for itself. I think also just the fact that before, I mean, I might be sort of thinking with a bit of rose-tinted glasses, but I think before we used to see fame as being something that had no drawbacks, that you could be overwhelmingly successful and famous and be in the public eye and everything's amazing. And I think now you only have to see how many celebrities are talking about all of the daily negative attributes, particularly on their mental health, that you see that not being necessarily the case, you know. And I think people now understand that a show in which you become famous is going to change your life in many ways, absolutely, obviously, for the better, but also it could really complicate and really make your life difficult. And I think The attitudes have changed. And I also think it's the changing dominance of reality show TV and Saturday night TV. You know, even when X Factor was considered to be doing incredibly poorly by the tabloids, it's now probably rating 3-4 times more viewers than what Saturday night shows are currently getting on TV. I think everyone's just spending their time elsewhere.
So where is the next Saturday night show coming from, guys? What would you like to see in its place?
Hayley, what do you have any ideas?
Oh, well, the stuff they're coming out with now, like we got hooked on The Masked Singer.
Why wouldn't you?
And then why wouldn't we? Well, the reason I wouldn't is I have a pre-existing allergy to singing competitions. So it was completely bizarre that I liked The Masked Singer. It was it shouldn't have happened. But I really don't know what's coming next, because competition shows like this, they just feel like relics from long ago. Like with the X Factor, it feels like we're seeing them with Caligula watching lions tear people apart, except it's not Caligula, it's just Simon Cowell. And I think that we should move away from competition shows, even though I know they make Twitter come alive and everybody loves to watch something at the same time as other people. I've just never been a huge fan of them.
So are you saying that competition shows like Strictly, which is a dance competition, The Voice is also a singing competition, The Masked Singer is a competition? So are you kind of, you don't think that Saturday Night Entertainment should have any form of competition in it?
Not for me. But then I've never been a fan of them. I know they're for other people.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Scott?
I mean, it's so hard. I think it's so much harder for a show to prove itself now, because it has to be successful straight away or it's gone. And I think in a weird way, that makes TV program makers less ambitious, particularly on normal TV, because they know they can't spend a lot of money on it in case it is a massive flop. So I think until a streaming service or a channel takes a big risk and it goes in a different direction. But these are always trends, aren't they? So who knows? I can't wait to see what fresh hell variation of The Masked Singer we have to review next.
It is funny though, because, you know, if you look at, you know, something like that, and, you know, I've got young kids, and, you know, we didn't think that they would like, you know, they're absolutely glued. And it's entertaining, and there's whimsy in it.
Yeah.
I remember there's this great moment when Lemmy from Motorhead walked off, never mind the Buzzcocks, and he just turned around and went, "Where's the whimsy?" And and he left. And I think that one of the things about Saturday Night Entertainment is that there should be a little bit of whimsy. And I think that that Masked Singer and stuff like that does kind of capture a little bit of that flavour. Whereas maybe something which is, "This show will change your life," and then it doesn't, kind of becomes, you know, the show that goes. Yeah. Scott, you and I are going to talk about I'm a Celebrity Going to Wales rather than Australia, because we know that Hayley has no interest in a show that's a competition.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, it's just been announced in the last couple of hours that yet again, they're going to be heading to Wales instead of Australia for I'm a Celebrity 2021. I mean, obviously, the fact that we're still in a global pandemic and the fact that it's become, I think, increasingly complicated to have celebrities fly out to Australia. It seems to be the case with entertainment shows. You can actually head in and quarantine. I think kind of getting back or having many people go there seems to be the difficulty. But also in a weird way, the fact that I'm a Celebrity did it in a castle last year actually added a boost to the amount of people watching. They had 11 million viewers for the final and for the first episode, which was their highest since 2018. So I don't think they had to come to this decision painfully. I think they were quite pleased that it's probably saved them a lot of money.
Well, it has.
I imagine it's quite a relief to the wildlife of Australia. It's a successful lobby by the Beatles of Brisbane.
That is very true. There's also that thing, though, that I think when a lot of people first heard that it was going to Wales, they thought it wouldn't be as good. And, you know, I spent the last couple of weeks in a camper van with our two kids, and I was driving to the ferry in Holyhead, and I actually spotted the castle from the road. And, no. You know, clearly they had no idea, but I got quite excited. I go, "That's what they do. That's what they do the show." So it's a thing of good television, no matter where it's made. If it's made right, you're going to watch it.
Well, yeah, totally. And also, I think it's the age-old way that because things have changed during a pandemic, it's forced, like everything, people to reevaluate how things are done differently. And I think now, as we go back towards a new normal, I think some shows will just get made differently now because they realise that the new way of working probably is the better way of working.
And that means that we all sit at home and talk to each other on Zoom. I mean, come on. The next time you talk, I want you guys to have come up with something which involves, you know, glamour. No, clearly, no competition, because obviously, you know, Hayley won't want that. But some type of what do we think? Should it be glamour?
You want us to give away our gold live on radio?
I'm so excited to
we
be working in development.
We could have amazing
now.
Ideas. Yeah.
Look, you've already written, you know, at least half an episode of Buffering for Steve Bajaya earlier on.
I mean, Where's our money, ITV2? Where is it?
I think this. Did you just go
we'll
Bob
Geldof? Ourselves. But...
Did you just go Bob Geldof for me there, Scott?
No,
ITV,
I didn't.
Show me the money.
Show me the money.
Where's the money? So we are generally quite happy that I'm a Celebrity is staying in Wales.
Yeah, why not? I mean, it seems to do well for them. I'm not a massive fan of I'm a Celebrity because I don't like sort of seeing bugs and stuff being used as entertainment generally. I think it's a bit passé, but that's all good for the time being.
I think you're right there. I think that's probably going to be the next thing, which is probably going to change. Let's have a look at Download. These are usually Scott and Hayley's picks of the week across TV and streaming that you must have a look at. Hayley, let's start with you.
My recommendation is Sex and the City on Now. Now, I know this isn't new or even good, but I had my second Pfizer jab the other day, and the only side effect, aside from sleepiness, was the urge to watch Sex and the City 2, which is one of the worst films ever made. It's just, it's atrocious. But it reminded me that we haven't actually talked about the fact that HBO is making a new season of Sex and the City. And that's kind of our jobs. So I'm just here to tell everyone that I've been watching this all unfold on Instagram. It's very exciting. It's called And Just Like That. And they've got three of the original stars returning. So that's everyone except Kim Cattrall, who played Samantha.
Why
for various
is that?
Reasons. Well, she had a falling out with Sarah Jessica Parker.
I see.
Big drama, and, you know, it goes deep. So she's not coming back.
They couldn't come to an Eagles type of arrangement on this. I remember the Eagles had a tour years ago called the Hell Freezes Over Tour, which is exactly what they said. When will you reform? When hell freezes over? It's a stadium tour and you're guaranteed 50 million. We'll do it.
We'll do it, yeah. Well, even that could not drag her back. Now, I have no idea if this is going to be any good, but I do know it will be better than Sex and the City 2. That movie was written, directed, and produced by one guy, whereas this show has a team of female writers, and one of them is one of the funniest people on the internet. She's called Samantha Irby, and she's a black lesbian who mostly writes funny essays about her IBS and terrible diarrhea she's had in various public places. So I have no idea if it will be good, but the chances of it being funny and of someone having diarrhea are very, very high. And that's important to me.
Okay. I can see, I'm just getting a much clearer picture, Scott, of how Hayley's mind works.
Very much so.
What else you got for us?
My show is Blind Ambition. It's a documentary that was actually on BBC Two last night that you can watch on iPlayer. And it's a fascinating documentary into sight loss. And it's created by Jamie O'Leary. He's a TV director who has been making lots of documentary films that makes people look at disability differently. But his eyesight is so bad that he's having an operation soon and he's at risk of sight loss completely. So this documentary looks into the possibility about what it is like for himself being blind by speaking to others who have had sight loss themselves. And you would think that this would go down a particular, sad direction. And of course it does. It talks about people who have despaired because with some of these contributors, they've lost their eyesight very, very quickly. And in some cases, just through incidents or in a very short space of time. And they talk about how people's fears. There's a New York Times a piece that they quote saying that number one people's fears is losing their sight. So it explores that. But it also talks about a lot of these people's willingness to continue with the career and jobs that they have despite their sight loss, and the fact that they have found a lot of joy and satisfaction through it, or have tried something differently because of it, including somebody who does wood turning, which is essentially dealing with a blade. And of course, that person cannot see what he's been working with. And I think it looks at sight loss in all of its complexity. I think that's what I loved with this. It has a lot of humour. There's the observational comedian Jamie McDonald along. He provides a lot of lightness and a bit of a dry humour to the overall thing. But I think it explores an issue that you always see one-dimensionally portrayed on TV, and it gives it heart and warmth and humour. And I really enjoyed it. So that's on iPlayer.
That is on iPlayer. Hayley, your second choice, I think, should be on iPlayer, but it's actually on Amazon Prime and BritBox.
Yeah, this is the thick of it. So I haven't watched this in about 10 years, and it's even funnier than I remember it being. And it's a cliche now to say that real politics is overtaking thick of it politics in terms of absurdity. But I'm going to say it anyway, because it's true. And watching what's happening in the actual news, and then watching an episode where Malcolm Tucker has a monumental screaming fit over something comparatively minor, makes the real news more interesting, because you can kind of imagine that something even worse than this was happening to someone in a room at number 10. I find it delicious comfort viewing just to imagine that there might be a Malcolm Tucker putting the fear of God into somebody somewhere. The idea that MPs might want to flee the building when they hear he's in it.
No.
I like this idea.
Really? Surely fiction. Surely fiction. It's so well written, isn't it? And
it's so good.
It kind of just doesn't date. It doesn't appear to date whatsoever. I mean, it's been 10 years since you watched it, and it still kind of hits all the buttons.
Yeah. As I say, funnier than I remember it being, and I'm not sure I'm getting references that I didn't get 10 years ago or I wasn't paying attention, but it is a special one. And I love Veep as well, but this one is like quintessentially English and it's a lot smaller than Veep. The levels of absurdity are just mind blowing.
Scott, I'm looking at two words here, which are the title of your next recommendation. Sell this to me, please.
So I think that on download, just by default, we always go for adult comedies and and adult shows. But I realised that actually there is really a great trend of really well-written, really well-acted teen-based dramas on at the moment, particularly on Netflix. So they've been having Elite for a while, which does a lot of issue-based plots. And this new one that's come along is called Young Royals. And it looks at a young member of the royal family Princess Wilhelm of Sweden, who gets involved in a fight, gets taken away to a private school, and his fictional drama is just him trying to find his place in the world. He falls in love with a young pupil there as well, and it's about their relationship, and it's incredibly tender. But I think what I love about it is that there is a trend, and it's the same with Scam, which is this really viral teen-based sitcom from a few years ago, of just being incredibly authentic. And they must do so much research into how teenagers are living their lives and the issues that they experience, because it's just unlike anything you see on TV. It can be a bit soapy, it can be a bit ridiculous at times, but these shows tend to have way more heart at times than shows aimed at adults. I find it a bit strange because I thought it would not be the case. I thought with teens, I'm so used to seeing teen shows from when I was a teen, which felt no relationship. It was always aspirational, beyond the point of belief. It always made you feel a bit rotten afterwards. But now they're coming through, including this one, with a trend of authenticity that I just absolutely adore.
Okay, that's the choices. Healy, Sex and the City and The Thick of It, Scott Blind Ambition and Young Royals. Let's crack on with our second review, Hayley.
This one is Richard E. Grant's new travel series, Right Around the World. And basically what he's doing is he's following in the footsteps of some of the greatest writers, quite literally, really, because he's traveling to where they wrote their famous novels and the cities where their stories were set. So he follows Charles Dickens, Elena Ferrante, Patricia Highsmith and Robert Harris to Italy in the first episode. And later we get to see him in France talking about Patrick Susskind's novel Perfume. And finally, Ernest Hemingway and J.G. Ballard in Spain. Here's a clip.
So, I've got a case for clothes and a bag for books. These books aren't the usual travel guide. All the books I'm taking were inspired by the places I'll be visiting, and I'm hoping that seeing them through the eyes of great writers will give me fresh insights into the life and history of some of Europe's most stunning destinations.
I'm in already.
Me too.
Just for that.
Me too. That bit where he's packing his suitcase and he's got like one small case for clothes and one giant bag for books. That's like me, because I can never decide what I'm going to take. I've dragged giant bags like that across America. Just my mind. I loved this. It's another travel show, but it's different because it's got Richard E. Grant in it, the most excitable man in the world, and he's in enthusiasm. And I think it's specifically made for nerds like me. Everyone who reads a book like The Talented Mr. Ripley wants to know more about the place it's set or where exactly Patricia Highsmith wrote it. And he's doing exactly that. So he's going to cities that people have gone to before in travel documentaries, but you're seeing them differently. You're not exactly seeing the sordid underbellies, but you're looking through doorways and seeing old Italian men paint signs for fruit stalls, or you're seeing caves in people lived with farm animals. He's not just walking around in his shorts and pointing at things either, which he could easily get away with because he's Richard E. Grant. He's actually speaking to experts and you learn. I thought it was lovely.
Everything about this just kind of fits together perfectly, doesn't it? Because if you were choosing one person to go back in time and to take the grand tour, it's kind of Richard E. Grant. And as you say, he's one of the most enthusiastic men in the world, but I kind of feel Richard E. Grant is enthusiastic about all the right things.
Yes. Yeah.
I
he kind of gets that right, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He does, because there was also a show he did for Sky Atlantic maybe 4 years ago where he just goes to nice hotels. And the best bit about it is that you can feel the tension of the people who run these nice hotels being like, don't touch the furniture, don't jump on the bed. And of course, the first thing he does is touch everything and jumps on the bed. And he just is one of those people who whose enthusiasm is not left in within himself. He tries to show it as much as possible. And that's exactly the case with this show as well.
But all I would say, if you're a person who doesn't enjoy other people's food enjoyment noises, there's a scene, a pizza eating scene you should skip, because He really enjoys that pizza slightly too much.
Don't listen to that with your headphones like I did. But I love the fact that in travel shows, it's always the case of, oh, let's show you the nicest bits. Whilst with this, particularly when they talked about Elena Ferrante's My Brilliant Friend, they would relate to the fact that that book is set in a, well, apparently no one knows where exactly it is, but a rural part of Naples, which has got links to the Gomorra. So they were showing the deprived inspiration from the areas where the author may have lived to draw these characters from. And I think going to the source material of where books are set, I think is just great as a premise for a show. It's a travel show, but not just people having a lovely time.
I think one of the things that for me works about this is the best travel shows are someone who is genuinely interested in the subject matter, knows a lot about it, but wants to find out more and actually isn't a snob. So they're actually happy to show what they know and what they're discovering to everyone. And it kind of hits all of this, Hayley, doesn't it?
It really does. And I love reading books that are set in real places. And there's something very special reading a book that is a real place. So if you go there, you can see the fictional characters in your mind like they're ghosts. And he has that too.
It's almost like you said that so I could say thanks to Scott and Hayley. That is it for Must Watch this week. All three of us will be back next Monday on BBC Five Live and BBC Science chatting to the stars of Ghosts Series 3. There you go. Funny. See what you've done there?
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed that, then why not check out Headliners, the podcast where I go deep with the biggest names in entertainment, culture, and the arts.
Imagine being upset by someone on Twitter. I'm too happy.
No divine right. You've got no divine right to be number one or to have loads of people at your gig.
I'm a softie.
Well, maybe you're still that little girl.
I think I am.
A lot of it, I think, is a stigma we're growing and all.
Elton, it's been so nice to speak to you.
I send you the biggest hug to you, OK?
Oh, you're white. Now you tell me.
I wanted to let you down quietly.
Thank you so much. I'm crushed.